Well, hello everyone. I'm your host, Cindy Ketzel. Thanks for joining us for this episode of 9 to Thrive HR. In this podcast, we team up with experts to bring you the best in HR, talent management, and business strategy. And of course, as I always mention, we would love to hear from you. If you do have a specific topic or even somebody you'd be interested in us interviewing on this podcast, send us a quick email at podcasts@hci.org. Hey, you all, we have got Alexis Normand today. He's the co-founder and CEO of Greenly. And I thought, instead of me running through his resume or telling you a little bit more about his company, I would eloquently ask him to do that. This is a new industry for me to have on our podcast, so I thought it would sound best coming from the expert. So, A, welcome, Alexis. We are so pleased to have you on today.
Hey, Cindy. I'm so happy to be here. So thanks for inviting me.
We're so glad to have you. And it's so cool to have a company on that is so aware and paying attention, I guess, to what's going on around us environmentally. So could you, Alexis, tell us a little bit more about yourself and this venture of Greenly?
Sure. So I'm the CEO, co-founder of Greenly. It's a tech company that we founded 4 years ago. And essentially, our take on climate change was that, you know, needs a lot of awareness, and you can't really improve something that you don't measure. So today, about 25% of global emissions are being tracked and measured. But if we actually want to get to that net zero objective by 2050, everyone needs to do it. So we essentially created a company that works on making carbon accounting simple for all types of companies. And that's what we've been working on in the last 4 years. And we've managed to onboard about 1,500 companies. So we've learned a lot working with these companies on, of course, not just climate change, but how they approach it and the topic of today.
You know, when Alexis and I had a chance to talk previously, and it just really does blow my mind. And I know you are so passionate about it, but it's just so fascinating to me that something like this even exists. So bravo to you for, you know, putting together a platform that will help our organizations that are, you know, ready to be or mindful in being more aware of what's happening environmentally. But the little bit that I read, I know your platform helps organizations, as you mentioned, kind of track or reduce their carbon footprint. What does that mean to us? Like, what's possible with what, I mean, it really does blow my mind. These are two worlds that are most unfamiliar to me.
Happy to explain.
Yeah.
So it's still relatively unknown to most people, you're right, but it is something that I believe every company, probably every individual, will start tracking much sooner than you think. And the reason for that, right, is we are emitting about 50 billion tons of CO2 each year. We need to get to 10 billion by 2050, and most of the emitters are the company. But you're right, something like a ton of CO2 is something very abstract, and so it's not super relatable, right? Let's just say a ton of CO2 is about what it would take to fly from, say, New York to Paris for one individual. So it's the equivalent pro rata emissions of one person flying from Paris to New York. But so companies are not super familiar with what that is. In the US, as of 2024, listed companies will need to report it according to the SEC. So it's going to become mainstream. And it is mainstream in certain geographies in Europe, particularly. And so what it is that you measure is a company's direct emissions. It's scope one. And what that refers to is basically all the emissions that would come from basically the fuel that you burn to heat a building, or if you own company cars, you know, the gasoline, or your AC has refrigerating gases that sometimes leak and they have a high global warming effect. So that's your direct emissions. But then in carbon accounting, you also look for indirect emissions. One is called scope two. So it's very simple. You consume energy, you consume electricity. It's brought to you by a power plant, and that power plant has been burning coal or gas, or maybe it's nuclear, or maybe it's renewable, but it emits. and it's directly linked to your own consumption. And you can track this if you're able to track the electricity consumption. And then last but not least, you have what we call scope 3, which are all the other emissions linked essentially to your supply chain. So if you're buying $1 million of steel every year out of China or some other country or even the US, people have been like using up a lot of energy to produce that. And so it's not directly with you, but you're dependent on those purchases. And so it's what we call your indirect emissions too. And so we measure all of that stuff through our platform, and it sounds difficult, but we make it as easy as possible.
It blew my mind the first time we spoke, and it still blows my mind today. So, oh my gosh, it's incredible what you're able to do, right? And you have to have obviously the knowledge and the talent to be able to do it. And then of course you've created this wonderful platform.
And the passion.
And the passion. Yes. 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 And then this platform, right? And the wonderful people that work with you to be able to guide people like me to be able to even start to begin to set that up behind the scenes so that they even can begin to track it. So thank you for telling us a little bit more. I'm sure there are listeners out there that are a little bit more elevated in their awareness around this than I am. So that helps for those of us that are a little bit more like me. So Alexis, one of the reasons, not just one, well, yeah, just one of the reasons that I thought this would be a really interesting conversation for our listeners, I was reading a little bit about you, and there was a survey that was conducted in 2021. And as I was learning a little bit more about you, one of the things that was referenced in some of the resource was this term eco-anxiety. And I mentioned that survey because there was a blip in the summary that mentioned that in 2021, 84% of individuals between the ages of 16 and 25 expressed moderate concern about climate change and were labeling that the term of eco-anxiety. And so one of the reasons that I thought it would be really interesting to have you on with us is because I think, well, one, I want to get your perspective of that eco-anxiety, but two, you know, there is that connection between, especially if you think about that age range, 16 to 25, right? This is the generation that's starting to enter into the workforce full time, but just that connection to what organizations are doing and being mindful of the environment. So I guess it's a two-part. What does it mean to you, that title of eco-anxiety, and then that connection back to folks within an organization?
Sure. So climate change is very stressful because it gives people the impression that if we're not able to do anything about it, living in a world where it's like plus 4 degrees Celsius is, you know, going to create a lot of climate catastrophes. So, and it's all the more stressful that it feels like it's very hard to tackle. So the term was, I guess, popularized by youth figures, you know, like Greta Thunberg and activists and so on. But I think it's really the idea of helplessness that stresses people out. Now, obviously, we're about saying there is something to be done about this, and there are very practical things that everybody can do, but it needs to be widespread. And what we've learned working with all these companies, right, is that if we link this to the HR topic that you're a specialist of, is that many employees are super concerned about this. And very often they may feel at odds what their company is doing or not doing about this. And so they tend to become a lobby of sorts to get an organization moving. And I think, as you mentioned in your survey, the activism, so to speak, is more prevalent among the youth. They had the chance to study this at university more often than older people have. So they're much more concerned. Teachers talk about it. There's also science that has been popularized that you didn't hear about too much 20 years ago and so on. So it's not just a youth phenomenon, but they're going to have to live with this world that's going to be hotter. So I think the eco-anxiety kind of tends to be focused on those younger populations, the newcomers to the job market.
I mean, I literally see it in my notes, right? 16 to 25. And I literally said in my conversation, those who are entering into our workforce. But you're right, we weren't hovering around that topic too tremendously. And that makes so much more sense to me
now. It's brand new. In the US, you have the Stanford Sustainability School that opened basically last year. Same with Columbia. So I think science has been building up, but it wasn't thought of something that everybody needed to know about. So things like what I described earlier on, like scope 1, 2, and 3, are relatively new concepts for most people. But I expect this should be as, you know, well known as what a balance sheet is, basically, if you do college or something.
Yeah. So I think my question for you, you had mentioned, I believe you had about 1,500 companies or customers that have joined Greenly and are utilizing your platform. What are you seeing? Because this is pretty fascinating to me. What are you seeing? I guess, I don't know if the word is characteristics or not, but those customers that are seeking out a resource to help with mining some of this.
Sure. So, you know, everybody wants to do the right thing and contribute to reducing climate change. But I think when you have to get started, this can't be, you know, a nice to have. This needs to be like a clear and present need. So one of the reasons we've grown so fast is that we work with a lot of customers who need this right now for a set of very specific reasons. So one of them is employee lobbying. Especially if you're working with young tech engineers, they've learned this at school. You know, they wouldn't want to work for a company that's not actively implementing policies to reduce emissions. Especially in this job market in the US, employee retention is a burning topic. And being a climate engaged company helps you get that talent. And sometimes it takes the form of, you know what, we're going to become B Corp. And if you want to be B Corp, doing carbon disclosure, reducing your emissions, offsetting them, definitely gets you a lot of points and helps you pass the bar fight faster. So that's one type of company. But the mainstream companies, actually, they tend to be in a process where it's being requested as part of a tender, an RFP. It's a procurement department saying, well, you know, if you want to work with, say, Walmart or the US Army, you have to track your emissions because we, as a large organization, have set an objective for reducing and getting to net zero. And this means that our suppliers must contribute to our own trajectory. So we're working like this for a company you may have heard of called Fruit of the Loom. And they obviously had started stuff on climate, but they had a very pressing need to just keep working with the US Army. And so since they're equipping so many soldiers, they have to be contributing to that organization's reduction plan. And perhaps the last and a more fundamental reason is this idea that you have to take change by the hand before it grabs you by the throat. So there's this idea that many businesses are going to be phased out if they're not fit for a net zero world. So it's happening, right, for car companies. They're all moving to electric. Now, if you're in a business where you're going to be phased out because nobody is going to work with you because of that, then you need to start tracking now. So that's the general idea.
You know, after we had had our first conversation, I'm mindful of this stuff, but I just think I'm removed from it. I know electric cars are coming, but I don't think about it. I'm not thinking about it. So it's amazing that you all were able to create something that can help organizations to track this. But that twofold piece of one, you know, getting us to zero, and then two, it's also helping to squash some of that eco-anxiety, as you mentioned, some of the folks coming into our workforce now that are kind of demanding, what are we doing about our world? What can we do about what we exist in?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, what we tend to fear the most is what we are most ignorant about. So, because if you don't know how something works, you can't really do anything about it. Whereas if you start to understand what the issue at hand is, well, very rapidly you understand that, you know, it's not necessarily going to be easy, but at least there are action plans that can be put forward. So I think ignoring the topic generates more anxiety than looking at it upfront and saying, here's where we are. We're not pretending we're fantastic, but, you know, at least we're honest about it. And maybe we can't like reduce our emissions drastically right now or contribute immediately to a world where there are less emissions, but at least we know where we're at now and we have time to think about it. And nobody's asking anyone to change overnight. The whole transition, you know, is a plan in the next 3 or 4 decades. So it's incremental change. It's great to be heroic, but we can't all be heroes. So it's mostly about planning collectively for something that ensures when we'll be older, things are better. And, you know, the planet we leave for our kids are going to be more livable.
So that, I guess, is my question. Again, when we think about organizations and we think about eco-anxiety, are there things that even just at a really simple level in our organizations, maybe we're not to the point, Alexis, that you're speaking of, you know, we don't have those pressures. We're just wanting to be mindful of what we're doing within our organization. Maybe we're not to the point of utilizing a resource like yours, or we're, like you said, we're not feeling those pressures just yet, but we're starting to plan. Are there simple, mindful things that organizations can do to help reduce some of that eco-anxiety?
Sure. So first of all, you know, obviously I'm an advocate of everybody tracking their emissions. So we have customers who are at 10 employees. You know, we have some who have 10,000, right? But everybody can do that. But I think to your point, exactly what can we do to reduce that anxiety? Well, I would say the very first thing is training people on this, being transparent, talking about it. So one thing we've observed that is hugely popular, you wouldn't imagine, are organizing climate workshops. And they can be actually quite fun, and they have a massive impact on reducing anxiety. So there's one format that is particularly popular that we've experimented with many of our customers. It's almost like a card game thing, which ends up summarizing the IPCC report. So, you know, the scientific authority on all the science on climate change that publishes yearly reports. So they're the one modeling how climate will evolve and what causes what and so on. And it's a system of cards that's organized by teams. And then basically the whole point is to order things between causes and consequences and not to like summarize the 6,000 pages of the IPCC report in 2 minutes. But basically, that's kind of the idea. And it's like, okay, well, what is this greenhouse effect? And, you know, how is human activity contributing to greenhouse effect? And what is the level of CO2 and other gases? How is that affecting greenhouse effect? And then how is this leading to other things like, you know, different natural disasters that we hear about more and more? And how is this affecting other sectors and so on? And basically, yes, it's kind of scary, right, to put on the table all those wildfires, potential floods and droughts and so on. But at the same time, when you start to understand the causes, people are like, okay, well, you know what? I can actually do something about this, because then there are many ways, both individually and at a company level, that you can reduce your emissions, and I can get into that as well. But just to your point, I think the most popular, the most interesting thing is just to train people on what is fast becoming general knowledge. But for those of us who are above 35 or 40, as is my case, well, we didn't get a chance to learn that at school. And I think this is changing for our kids, but the generation at work doesn't necessarily have the right training on this.
Yeah, it's cool too. And even as you were just talking about that, and I hear your point of saying it can be kind of scary to see what's coming by going through this training session with these cards. But at the same time, I'm sitting here thinking, but it also might, you know, for organizations that are a part of that or individuals that might be a part of that, I can also see where we may identify or relate and say, hey, I literally can have an impact on that. Or my team at my organization can have an impact on, you know what I mean? Like there's these probably little aha moments that come out of, you know, and so maybe it's not as grandeur yet as utilizing a resource like what you're offering, but at least we're, you know, starting to wrap our brains around, because it also is really big. It's a really big thing, like you said, and it's hard to wrap our brains around.
but it's very actionable at our own level. So it feels like, you know, this is such a big problem that I can't do anything about it. But that's actually not the way to think about it. Because look, if you look at a country like the US, it's about 20 tons of CO2 per person if you average it out. And just like think of it as a pie chart where transportation, you mentioned it, planes, trucks, cars, they're about 30% of total US emissions. Then you've got about 20%, which is housing, offices, construction of new buildings and so on. And it's building the stuff, but it's also heating it, air conditioning and so on. And then you've got about 20-30%, that's your shopping, right? Your consumption, your clothing, all of that stuff. Then you've got the food. And then you've got things like healthcare and government. But this is like the US breakdown, but it's actually also the kind of corporate breakdown, if you like. I mean, they're different per sector. And so you can think about ways to decarbonize each of these items. So you can reduce the emissions of a corporate building. There are many ways to do this. You can consume less energy. You can isolate stuff better. You can replace your equipment by things that are more energy efficient. You can replace your company cars. You can drive less to work. You can do more Zoom calls. So you can think about smarter ways to move things around. And I can go into the details of different types of companies and what they can do and what employees can do. But I would just say this. Raising awareness among employees not only reduces anxiety, it creates willingness to act. And more than that, it creates a lot of internal cohesion. You know, you have a lot of companies that say, hey, we're going to go after B Corp, we're going to do this. Well, having a project that can be linked to the business to engage your employees, I mean, it's also good business, actually. So,
Yeah. And we had talked about, and that's where I'm going to kind of wrap us up to, and I just to really tie this back to our audience here, Alexis, when you and I had talked previously, one for sure shared vision that we both have is we know that organizations, you know, are being more mindful of also just what our employees need and what a newer generation's coming into our organizations, what their values are. And I think we're starting to see that reflected in values of organizations and their EVPs and what's important and their volunteerism and making sure we have an inclusive environment and mindful of work-life balance. And of course, you know, we can even add, you know, monitoring and reducing that carbon footprint. But you and I had talked before about how all of these things, this big bucket, how it really is helping employers to retain and kind of speak the language of their employees. So does that kind of fit in with this? Is really that idea of retention and making sure we're, you know, mindful of our employee base within our organizations now as we follow along?
Absolutely. It can be quite extreme. So in some European countries, you've got students from top business and engineering schools. They will like trash the HR booth at recruiting fairs of oil and gas companies, you know, and it becomes a huge like PR and recruitment problem for these companies. And so the oil and gas companies in Europe, they're all about saying, hey, we're not an oil and gas company. We're a company focused on energy and we're a driving force of the transition. But, you know, it's not just communication. It forces them to really do it as well. Probably not fast enough, but, you know, the new talent that you want to bring in is a very powerful lobby for change. So we're seeing that. I think we're not seeing enough of that in the US, to be honest. But I think it's there still. It's just not visible enough. And at the same time, you have your existing employees. Of course, I'm recruiting in this space, but all day long, I hear people coming to me and saying, listen, I'm now at a phase where I want my work to have meaning. And previously, I was in a company that was, you know, all about selling more and more of this thing. And of course, that makes sense, but with strictly no consideration for the impact beyond profits. I like the B Corp example. It's people, profit, and planet, you know. So it's not a radical view. It's an understanding of what's good for a business that wants to navigate this transition that we are all walking in now, basically. So that's my two cents on this.
I love it. No, thank you. I think this was so enlightening for me, and I'm sure for our listeners. Again, to your point, you know, you drew some really great connections to those companies that are already having to be mindful and plan and proactive and be strategic, you know, but there's also a lot of our folks that are listening in that they're not in that space yet, or they're a smaller company, or they're mindful of it, but maybe not mindful of it to a degree that perhaps they'd like to be one day. So this has been so...
If I can add one last thing, I would say that for a lot of our customers, beginning a climate journey is a fantastic career move, because it's a job that practically doesn't exist in most organizations. And so when they start their climate journey, they assign somebody, maybe from HR or from marketing or sometimes from procurement. And so what we see is that the people who take on the project, suddenly it's like a promotion. They promote themselves because they become the climate leader of their organization, and they actually, you know, open up their perspective on a lot of skills that they didn't have. So I think it's not just a corporate thing. It's really a personal enrichment and a smart career move, I would say.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I bet we'll see this as a title for years to come. So that's, you're probably reading the tea leaves a little bit there for us. Well, this was awesome. Thank you so much, Alexis. I really appreciate you, you know, again, so eloquently being able to explain this to myself and our listeners and how this all ties back in with our employers and our employees. So thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you. Thanks to you. It was a great opportunity. Thanks for your great interview.
Yes, thank you so much. All right, well, 9 to Thrive listeners, please don't forget, if you do have an idea, such as us listening in to Alexis here, if you have an idea for a topic or a suggestion for a guest, email us at podcasts@hci.org. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating. Your rating helps other professionals and talent-minded people discover our program. For 9 to Thrive HR and all of us here at HCI, we appreciate you for tuning in today. Make it a great day, everyone. Thank you.